Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Dr. Matthew Kalinske on the line, and he is CEO of Staffing Management Group. Matt, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Adam. I've watched your show so many times, so I'm excited and honored to be a guest.
Oh, Matt, thank you for that. And excited to get into today's topic. So really what you're doing over there at Staffing Management Group, helping entrepreneurs start, grow and scale staffing companies. I think it's really interesting, and it's a really interesting industry for entrepreneurs that are looking for opportunity or growing within what they've been doing for a long time. So excited to get into that. But before we do, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So Matt, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Matt, what mission matters to you?
Personally, Adam, it's helping entrepreneurs in the staffing and recruiting space start up, grow, and scale their organization. You know, people who are entrepreneurs have a different chemical makeup, and we have a lot of great ideas. And sometimes it's a matter of creating some formation and operational support to get from where they want to be to where they're going and in the direction that they need it. So everything we do on our organization at Staffing Management Group is helping those entrepreneurs who are focused in wanting to grow their organization from either a direct hire recruiting, temporary staffing, or long-term contractor.
Awesome. Love bringing mission-based individuals on the show to share why they do what they do, like why it's important, how they're giving back to the marketplace. So that's great. Let's go back a little bit further in your career. So like, how did you get started on this entrepreneurial path overall?
It's actually a great story. I was doing business before I knew I was an entrepreneur. So I was a undergrad at Loyola University in Chicago, and I was got into helping my upperclassmen fill out resumes when they were applying for jobs. And I would charge $99 to help them with their resumes. And when I was in my senior year of college, and right before I started medical school, there was in 2006, there was this need to be a temp to perm for a lot of the financial positions in Chicago. And so a lot of my friends, a lot of my fraternity brothers wanted to get in certain jobs, but they needed to be on a temporary assignment for 90 days before they got their full-time job. Mm-hmm. And so I said, sure, I can figure that out. I can help you, right? And I called up the customer in that case, and I said, yeah, you want to work, you know, you want Joe to work with you? And they said, yes, we love Joe. Send over your contracts. So I was like, okay, I'll make a contract. And then the next thing is, okay, you have to pay the worker. I was like, okay, I'll take out a loan and I'll pay the payroll. One thing led to another, one step at a time, one block, building block. I ended up running a staffing firm during my first 4 years of med school, and it was kind of evolving. I was always working nights and weekends, and it wasn't until 2016 that I realized I actually am an entrepreneur. And I went into this more on a full-time basis, still keeping up my medical license, but still optimizing not only employees' lives, but customers, as well as, you know, other businesses who needed help growing in that operational support.
Hold on. So it took you kind of going through medical school to understand that you had to know you were different. I don't believe that the other students that were going through medical school were running staff. I'm sorry, but I know a lot of doctors. This is not normal.
Yeah. Out of a class of 150, I was the guy that, you know, was doing the studying, and then I would have to step out to take a sales call, right?
That's crazy. So like...
But I was doing it to support. I really had the intention of helping to pay for medical school loans. And that was my primary intention. It was a filling the need. I couldn't necessarily afford those bills. Mm-hmm. I needed a second job while I was in school. And that's how I came along.
Man, the mother of necessity, right? Right there. There goes some need. And look what happened. So so you go a little bit further in this. So now you're thinking, okay, I'm an entrepreneur, and yeah. I feel this is a business that I want to be in. Like, what do you do next? Because I feel like this has got to be also when, you know, just from your peers, right? Whether it's parents, whether it's other individuals in general, like they're probably looking at you like, okay, you're running a staffing company, but you're going to be a doctor, right? Yeah. Like, how do you go through that identity part of things? And the reason I asked you that question, by the way, is there's a lot of, business owners, entrepreneurs, executives, executives that'll watch this, and some of them are in professional positions, yeah, like doctors or lawyers, and they, yep, may have, you know, some dreams to go out there and also do an entrepreneurial venture, whether it's full time or a side hustle or something else. But sometimes the pressure around us doesn't always let us go out and do what we want to do. So that's why I asked you that question. Like, how did you overcome that?
The social pressures are enormous, especially, yeah, when you're taking on hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt to go down a career that, since I was 5 years old, I was telling people I would be a doctor. And so, mm-hmm, it's that pressure is extremely, you know, intense. And whether it was medical school or maybe you know, you're looking to start a company in photography and you're leaving your, mm-hmm, desk job, it's a tough pressure. You know, a lot of people, yeah, question those ideas. I think you just have to have that self-discipline and self-awareness to acknowledge the fact that, hey, I am a little different and this is going to make me happy, whether it's successful or not. It doesn't change the fact that you have those entrepreneurial insights into, mm-hmm, into different things. And so for me, I did medical school from 2006 to 2010. Mm-hmm. In 2010, I did my residency and fellowships, mm-hmm, and then I practiced for, ended up being about 6 years. I just ended, stopped practicing about 4 months ago. So I was always, mm-hmm, kind of having that kind of dual life, and it was actually harder than just ripping off the Band-Aid. And now my life is so fulfilled right now over the last 5 months since I really have committed to this working.
Man, that's amazing. And I remember when I made the decision to leave finance and I'm like, oh my gosh, I was in that, yeah, business for almost 14 years. Yeah. And people thought I was crazy. They're like, what? CFP, Series 7, 6, 63, all that sacrifice you've made pretty much your whole life since teenage years to go down this path. And now you're going to be a media guy and you're going to be in a podcast and you're going to write a book?
You're a sellout, right? That's what you brought.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
But look how it's been great for you too. I mean, you've been on this great career as well. So congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And great team that makes this possible.
Always.
Shifting forward now. So you realize you're an entrepreneur and then you've taken, you know, your benefit and your gift, and you've also, you know, kind of spread that around. So like, I know you're very active with EO in Tampa and in that area. I mean, talk a little bit more about your involvement in the entrepreneurial community overall.
So I mentioned earlier in 2016 was when I first started to identify as an entrepreneur. And that was because I was on the Inc. 5000 list 3 times in a row. And when I went to the conference, there was a little booth in the corner that was just EO, and I had no idea what it was or who it was there. But at that conference, I realized, and I had a conversation, I was like, wait, an entrepreneur, maybe I qualify. Do I qualify? And I realized there's this whole segment of people, about 16,000 members globally, that are exactly like me. And that was the best feeling of inclusion I could have ever had. The minute I knew that there were other people that wasn't like an outcast, that there were other people who were doctors and entrepreneurs. There were other people who left financial careers to start podcast shows. And there's other people who do that. And now all of a sudden the conversations I was having was so much deeper on my personal, financial, business strategy. It was like, it was a team of personal advisors that I had around me that kind of understood. We spoke the same language almost. And so in 2016, I joined our local chapter. And like I mentioned, there's 16,000 people globally. So I have interacted with people from Switzerland, some Sweden, all throughout the US. We have regional and local conferences. And so I jumped on the board of Entrepreneur Organization of Tampa, and I've been on the board for 5 years. And currently I'm the president of the chapter, and the chapter is thriving.
Oh, it's amazing. Great story. Great, great story. I want to switch it up a bit. So let's go further into today's topic and really how you're helping other entrepreneurs in the staffing area.
Yeah.
First off, like, obviously you could have continued just to grow your own staffing company, yep, your own business, gone along your path and dominated and did what you did in growing a business, right? You could have did that, but you decided to not only to obviously do that, but you decided to help other entrepreneurs do the same. Like, what was the shift in that decision? Like, what was the opportunity there?
So it's strictly an opportunity, like you said. So in 2006 through 10, I was running my own staffing firm. I had to do my own business development and my own recruiting while I was in medical school. So when I went into residency, I said, well, I have all the operational support and I can continue to work nights and weekends on the operational, the funding, the workers' comp, the payroll. I need to find a solution to bring in the sales and do the recruiting. And I realized I had a group of recruiters, and I was realizing that they had great connections, but they were only doing direct hires. And when you do a direct hire, it's really, you know, a finder's fee for a one-time transaction. And so they were constantly struggling to keep up with, you know, that lifestyle. But when I talked to them about adding temporary staffing to their existing executive search firm, it changed everything. And we were able to help create the authorized dealer program at that time in 2010 to really support other entrepreneurs in the staffing firm, in the staffing industry, help them get up and running like we talked about. So we would not only help them start that first worker, but we also became the employer record, the funding, the invoicing, all of those operational things that they just didn't have time for. Mm-hmm. And what changed was now they had a baseline revenue from their temporary staffing that paid the bills and helped them make better business decisions in the long run. For example, when you have consistent income from temporary placements, you can choose to bring on additional recruiters or utilize services like LinkedIn that you can pay for different job ads or career builder. Whereas if you were on a one-by-one transaction, you may not get a placement the month of February. You know that in the month of March, you're probably not going to have any income because they pay 30 days later. And so that keeps you up at night because that could happen anytime. But once you get 5 to 10 workers in the field, that creates a steady cash flow that becomes predictable cash flow. And that just changes the whole direction of how people can grow their business.
That's amazing. And so taking us further down the line, now helping other companies. So that's where it started. Like, where are we at now?
So we created Staffing Management Group to oversee the USA Staffing Authorized Dealer Program because I had lots and lots of conversations, thousands of conversations with people in staffing and recruiting. And the Authorized Dealer Program fills a big need for a lot of executive search firms. But there were always people that we couldn't really help. And my mission, as I mentioned, is to help all entrepreneurs in staffing and recruiting. And so in 2018, we created Staffing Management Group as a parent company, but also allowing us to provide management and consulting services, to provide recruiting support, workforce solutions, as well as, you know, equity purchasing. And that's something we're just launching in 2022, which is to really help on a partnership level, the entrepreneurs who just need that little, they got all the right pieces. They just need that extra operational support partner to take it to the next level. And so one by one, we've been rolling out these, you know, key components to helping entrepreneurs and staffing. And it started with just providing some consulting and then some management. And now it's we'll help you find those recruiters to help you build your team. And so it kind of has been a growth that's continuously changing and modifying based on what's needed in the environment.
Wow, what a story. And so what types of companies do you work with? And what I mean by types, obviously it's staffing, but are you working with only like large companies, like enterprise level, middle market? Are you working with smaller businesses? Give us a feel for the landscape of who you work with.
One of the best things about staffing and recruiting is it's people helping people. And so a lot of the big end user customers, the people who are using recruitment firms, or executive search firms, or temporary staffing, typically are those middle to larger companies. However, our clients under USA's Staffing's Authorized Dealer Program are those executive search firms with less than $3 million in revenue that are looking to start up and run a temporary staffing division or take it to the next level. And so a lot of our clients, our authorized dealers that we partner with throughout the country, they tend to be that small to mid-sized staffing firm, you know, zero to that $5 million in revenue. However, when it comes to the staffing management group, we help anybody from zero to 100 million in revenue with consulting services, management services. We try to tailor it to the products that are needed from that standpoint. I will say that the use of recruiting versus temporary has dramatically changed. If you look at any of the stats right now, year over year, it's about almost 14% higher use of staffing versus last year. And that's partly from the pandemic, but I think it's also a tool that a lot of smaller to mid-sized companies, end user customers mm-hmm. are starting to utilize because it makes sense from a cash flow standpoint. You can try before you buy, but yeah. it also builds that relationship. You can kind of work with somebody to really make sure they're a good cultural fit, mm-hmm. that they, you know, can do what they say they can do, they can perform, mm-hmm. but also at the same time, it eases the relationship a little bit. I think that contractors, the temporary workers also like it because they can try the customer before they actually right. get it. And that I think is the thing that a lot of people don't realize is there's a benefit to offering temporary staffing for the sake of the candidate, especially if they're trying to train and learn new skills, if they're trying to upskill on the job training. It provides a lot of people the opportunity to maybe learn a little bit more about accounting and maybe take on more responsibilities through a temporary assignment who you might not get a full-time job right away.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way I see this industry, at least high levels, there's multiple players here. Obviously the staffing side of things, there's also the employer, then there's the candidate. Yep. So sticking on, let's just stick with the staffing side of things just for a moment longer, but I do want to explore the employer side and yep. and the candidate side a little bit more, but sticking on the staffing side of things, what are some of the challenges that like you've used the word multiple times, like operationally? Now, obviously, within the scope of this interview, we're not going to go into all the operations.
Yeah, but do you have another hour?
Exactly. Right. And that's just to explain just payroll. Right. No. What are some of the challenges that you found, like when somebody tries to go at it, let's just say alone versus working yep. with a company like yours? Like give us some examples there.
Sure. I could give you 100 examples, but the main components of the limitations, why people with 10 years experience at AeroTech or Robert Half, the big firms, they have all the experience in the world. When they break off and start their own business, they run into a brick wall. Part of it is you need to provide workers' compensation to cover the worker. Some of those policies are extremely hard to come by, especially over the last 4 or 5 years. But they've always been hard for staffing firms. A lot of times you have to get a very expensive policy and you have to predict how much payroll you have and you have to prepay for it before you even get a customer. Mm. The next biggest thing is payroll funding. So oftentimes an end user customer, the customer that you're billing, will have 45 or 60 days to pay the bill, sometimes quicker, but still you have to pay the employee, pay the taxes, and then wait and hope that they actually pay their bill. So that limits you. Maybe you only could get one worker at a time or two workers out because you have 20 or 30,000 saved in the bank. But how many people actually have 20 or 30,000 saved in the bank that they can lend to somebody for payroll? It's hard to come by. The third is that operational, that payroll taxes. You actually have to, you know, there's a lot of state regulation for filing payroll taxes, the timing, the quarterly filings, the garnishments when they, you know, if they have child support and things like that. And so, you know, there's a lot of headache or burden associated with that. And so oftentimes they try to dip their toe, but then they say, I get nervous or I don't have the money. Yeah. And so what we come in and we try to ease those kind of nerves. And we say, listen, we'll provide the funding. We have the workers' comp. We're going to actually file all those payroll taxes for you. So you get to do what you're great at. Find the customers, fill the order.
Yeah.
And we'll do everything else. And that's been that partnership approach that we approach, you know, every authorized dealer with.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's awesome. And really what you've done is you've added it, from my understanding of staffing, a big part of this is the relationships that have been built over years, whether it's with employers, whether it's with candidates, whether it's with just industry knowledge and niche and knowing those nuances, depending on the type of job that you're placing or executive role you're placing to really be, you know, a leader in that field. But now what you're doing is you're giving another revenue stream that would have been untapped possibly, but without all of the additional risk that comes out going at it alone. Am I off on this? Or
you're 100% on that. Second, a source of revenue allows everybody to sleep better at night because it has predictable income over the next 60 days. And so you know that you're going to receive profit to make better decisions, to hire people, to maybe take a vacation. You know, if you're only transactional, I find one candidate, I get paid one fee. When you take a vacation, you know, nothing's happening. You know, you're going to, you know, be behind when you come back from that standpoint. But I think there's a consulting component. Like over the past 12 years since we launched USA Staffing, you know, we've been helping them with like, hey, this is what you can do to better yourself. You know, make sure you do take that vacation. Make sure you do unplug that phone because we got your back. You know, we're a partner in that conversation. And when they want to bring on a new customer, we go through the contract with them. We help them understand that these are the payment terms. This is how much money you'll make every hour that one worker is in the field. Is this something that you want to move forward with? And we kind of approach it very partner, you know, as a partner to partner conversation.
It's awesome. Let's switch focus a bit. I do want to talk about the employer side that you mentioned and the increased use of staffing companies in general, which it makes a lot of sense. The kind of like the try before you buy or the make sure it's a good company, good cultural fit. And like, tell me a little bit more about that and what you see happening in the marketplace.
So staffing recruiting is a leading indicator for the economy. When big businesses need to downsize, you know, it affects staffing first before other industries in general. And so over the past 16 years of being in the industry, you see trends. And in 2009, with the big recession we had then, there was a certain trend. In 2018, we saw that there was an abundance of workers hitting the workforce. You didn't have to be good at recruiting to fill good jobs because it was enough workforce for the jobs out there. Mm-hmm. What happened after COVID and what happened in 2022 is that the unemployment rate still staying at 3.8%, and the increase in demand for jobs makes that gap bigger. And the gap is where there's a talent gap. And so from an employer standpoint, they want to work with people who know what they really need, like a specialist in accounting positions, who've maybe filled some of their accounting positions in the past on a full-time direct hire basis. But now they're going to those specialists, those niche-based recruiters and say, listen, it's hard to find people. We've tried to find an accountant. We can't. I want you because you have your accounting specialty to help find a worker and we'll train them. So we would like a 90-day temp to perm. We would like to train this person to upskill them or just to confirm that they're a good fit from a cultural standpoint. I think the flip side is also true. You know, we don't really know what the next 90 days will come as well as we did in 2018 or 2017. You know, you were able to predict 6 months out in 2018 about where your needs were going, what the trends were, because there was no concern that things might get shut down. And from an employer end user customer standpoint, if they're in a city or a state that might be changing regulations, or if they need to shut down an office due to cash flow, they want the ability to like turn it off right away. And so with using long-term contractors, all they have to say is, we don't need this contractor anymore. And then it becomes the staffing firm owners or staffing team's responsibility to place that worker somewhere else. And that's a benefit on the flip side for the worker. They have, you know, one employer, but multiple opportunities. And so from an end user customer standpoint, it's a hedge. From a financial term, it's a hedge to say, we don't know where the next 90 day goes. We don't know if this is going to be a great worker and we don't know if we're going to be open in 90 days. So let's try them out. Let's see what the next Congress or voting or whatever it is happens. And then we'll make a decision in 90 days. And sometimes it's, let's just extend the worker for another 90 days and try it out. That's led to an increased use of temporary workers.
It makes total sense. And then looking from the candidate side of the coin, if you will, to me, what you just said, more opportunity, potentially working for more than one employer, getting a feel for different cultures, different workflows. Tell me how that side of the agenda has been for the candidates.
Yeah. So the great resignation is something that a lot of, I'm sure your listeners have kind of heard over the
past. We've all heard it more than we want to hear it.
And, you know, from a outside, from an insider kind of view over the last 16, it's more so we didn't see a lot of transition in 2020. So it's almost a catch up from the job shifting that normally occurs on an annual basis. So that in 2020, it was lower. 2021 was a little bit better. And now 2022, we're just seeing more people shift, but it's a catch up. They've been unhappy for 18 months and they've just been sucking it up. And now they have an opportunity. So this whole great resignation was almost predictable based on the fact that 2020 had such a low, you know, by choosing to find another job, you know, a choice of the employee standpoint. I think what also happened in that timeframe is a lot of people saw that the way their supervisor or the way their owner of the company or the way that their CEO handled an issue whether it was employee health, whether it was safety in the workplace, whether it was working from home, they didn't like exactly how that was managed.
Yeah.
And they saw the darker side maybe of their supervising team. Yeah. And maybe and I think at that point they said, hey, you know, this isn't the last time something like this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I want whoever is overseeing the company to make better choices in the future. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're trying to look to see it, you know, is this supervisor team a better decision-making mm-hmm. body? And so they can test it out from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. But they also don't know if the company is solvent or bankrupt when they take a job. And everybody knows somebody who took a job and then 4 weeks later, the job was closed yeah. or the company was closed. And so by utilizing as an employee, by utilizing the use of a temporary staffing firm, not only are they going to get better opportunities within certain markets or industries, mm-hmm. but they're also going to have that safety net. Oh, my company, the company I was working for isn't a good fit. Mm-hmm. I'm still employed with you. Can you just send me to other customer you mentioned last mm-hmm. week? Or, hey, the company I'm working for just closed, or, you know, the boss just yelled, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is, I need to change jobs. And they can pivot into a job without losing a paycheck often.
Yeah.
Because the need for workers are so high, mm-hmm. it's really the power is in the worker to make sure that they have a good place to work. And mm-hmm. and they're utilizing temporary placements to feel out the customer and to mm-hmm. pivot easier without skipping a paycheck.
Now, what kind of placements do you see in the industry? And obviously, there can be many, many, but you mentioned accounting more than once. So maybe it's like accounting, like manufacturing, like just give a feel of maybe for those. And what I'm asking basically is a lot of people maybe have never gone down this route, right? Yeah. They're like, well, I don't know if that's an option for me, or I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah. But I am looking. Like what are the type of placements that are out there?
So every industry is hiring right now, yeah. but I would say, you know, accounting is one of those where if you're semi-decent with numbers and you may have an associate's degree, you can actually get into a lot of, you know, entry-level accounting positions as accounting clerks or maybe a, you know, accounting bookkeeper. So it's a way to train if you can keep numbers straight and kind of are good at learning, but healthcare, non-nursing healthcare, IT and engineering are going to be the top three biggest industries that can not only utilize direct hires now, but also really are utilizing temporary staffing. And so healthcare, non-nursing, what I mean by that is that's the clinical, but not necessarily bedside nurses. We saw a huge influx of bedside nurse staffing in 2020, and a lot of people benefited from that kind of increase. What we're seeing now is the hospitals have reduced their billing what they'll pay for the worker, but mm-hmm. the nurses still want a really high pay rate. And so the demand is such, they're about 60,000 nurses short, that the margin for a staffing firm owner is really, really tight. So I always mm-hmm. recommend anyone who's doing nursing or of that term to really stick on the direct hire side. But the other clinical positions, physical therapists, occupational therapists, and then specifically IT is huge right now. Healthcare IT is specifically really big. When it comes to the engineering, you know, everything has a technology platform. Everybody has the ability to enroll or, you know, utilize technology in their business now. And so computer engineers, architects, IT designers have been big and continue to be big going in for the next 18 months.
Awesome. Well, Matt, just have to say, it's been great having you on the show, hearing about your background, everything that you've done, and your transition really from being a doctor to a full-time entrepreneur in the staffing space and being a blessing and helping other individuals in the staffing place succeed and grow. And when you said that part about a staffing individual now having the ability to take a vacation and to know that somebody has their back and to have a steady source of income and things like that. Like, I've known people in the staffing in world that were exactly in the position you're talking about. And it's tough. And yeah. to be able to take a vacation, to have a steady income in addition yeah. to those large lump sums, if you will, when you get some yeah. good placements here and there. I mean, that all helps. So I have to ask, so what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for your company?
I'm really excited that Staffing Management Group has now been helping businesses in a different way by equity investments or equity partnerships. So when I was talking about the authorized dealer partnership program, it was a split of gross profit type of partnership. It was a partner helping each other. But what we've taken that to the next level, and any staffing firm or recruitment firm that's looking for an equity partner, someone who has the infrastructure to help you grow, we can go deeper and really make some really great things happen with your business. And so I'm really excited about that equity part of Staffing Management Group.
Oh, that's awesome. And so, Matt, if somebody's watching this and they want to learn more, what's the best way for them to follow up and to connect?
That's so staffingmanagementgroup.com is going to be our website. And we have a contact us page that goes directly to myself and my senior consultant, Tyler. We'll be the two people that would be responding to those contact messages. Otherwise, anybody who's listening can email me directly at matt@staffingmanagementgroup.com. That's M-A-T-T. At staffingmanagementgroup.com.
Fantastic. And to the audience, we'll put all of that information into the show notes and clean it up for you. So you can just click on the link and head right on over. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters, we're a platform that's all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission. Why do they do what they do? Like, what gets them excited and fired up to go out into the marketplace and to make a difference? If that's the type of content that you're into, or if that excites you, we welcome you to hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Matt, it really has been a pleasure. I look forward to watching your continued success and growth. So thank you.
Thank you, Adam.